Hi everyone, my name is Amandine Flax and welcome to a new episode of Entrepreneurs Playing Games podcast edition. About every 2 weeks, I host a live video stream where I deep dive into startup founders' journey after playing video games with my guest. Here is the audio version of our discussion. If you're interested in the full video, be sure to check out my YouTube channel at youtube.com/AmandineFlax. And for any questions, suggestions, or just to say hi, you can find me on Twitter at AmandineFlax, AmandineFlax, or at EntrepreneursPG. In this week's episode, I have the pleasure to interview Jacobo Koenig, the CTO and co-founder of Decology. Jacobo, let's get started.
Awesome, yeah. So Decology, if you remember playing The Sims, when you would build a house, basically, for your little Sims to live in, it's basically that for real life. So basically, we allow people to create their own room in a very simple canvas where they give us the measurements, and that turns it into a 3D model. And then we help people basically visualize the products that they want to put in, the decorations that they want to make in the rooms through that 3D model. And then that's assisted with augmented reality and a few other things to basically solve the main problem that we feel that the industry is going through, which is visualization. Mm-hmm. So basically, there's a huge amount of returns that the industry has to suffer through, mainly because it's such big ticket items. So if you have to return this sofa, it's such a hassle for the retailers.
Yeah, I have no idea who will do that.
Anyway. Right, yeah. Exactly. So a few of the issues are the fact that I couldn't visualize it in my place before time, before the time that I bought it and got it delivered.
Yeah.
And so once I see it, I don't like it so much, I have to return it. Different things like that that we're trying to solve. So the way that we do it is letting people visualize it.
Makes sense. And I guess it may be so much easier also to organize your space. Sometimes you buy too many furniture and it just doesn't fit at all.
Exactly. So it's very interesting because we've been using technology that is very exact. So the way that you create your room is with exact measurements. Mm-hmm. And then each model is obviously based on the real life model. And the AR also, when you put it in AR in your actual room, that's also real size. So it's really interesting. It allows you to measure whether or not it's going to fit at all.
So you have a better idea before making the purchase.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And what about your story? So Shannon isn't here today, but it's always interesting to hear how everything started.
Yeah, of course. So I had to move away from that part of the world. It was part of the world where I'm from. Decided to come to London with my wife, and one of the first people that I met with was Sharon. I already knew her before because her brother was one of my best friends.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I remember when we met, the college was a completely different thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, okay, so the idea needs some work to sort of like fit into my mind, into what I to what I regard like a viable idea. But I remember thinking, Sharon is great. She's an entrepreneur that's going to make it no matter what. So I said, okay, let's be in touch. Let's see how this idea evolves. And, we'll see what happens. So we met throughout the best part of a year. Mm-hmm. And I helped her with different things until at some point I saw the idea come full circle. And that was at the point where we said, okay, so everybody in the industry is charging the consumer for this type of tools. And the reason is because they need a lot of people to basically create the 3D model, put it in the cloud, and then it's a whole mess, right? But then we figured, okay, let's find a way so that we can create a room automatically and then make it free for the consumer. And I remember very clearly at that point, I said, okay, so this is very sustainable because this is something nobody's doing. So we went out, we found a way, actually the team found a way to make the rooms procedural, and we were able to make it free for the consumer. That was a big thing. I decided to go in with Decology, and and then the rest is history.
Yeah, we're still making that history. That's so nice.
Yeah.
It's very interesting because I get the same feeling sometimes when I feel that someone is working on something. It's not just about the idea, but it's about the person, and you know that they are really going to make it happen, whatever they're going to do. For sure, they will pivot, they will change a few things, but you really want to be part of the journey in some ways. And that's an amazing feeling to be just able to help them just reach the next step in some ways.
Yeah.
Now, that's really cool. And before we play video games, I'd like to ask you why you feel that right now is the right time for retailers. You mentioned that they have been experimenting with the technology, but they required to, they needed to have a team internally to really help them create a lot of things, and they didn't necessarily have to model right. So why do you feel that right now is a good time for you to approach retailers and to launch this?
That's a great question. I actually don't think that right now is the right time. I think we're actually kind of late already.
Okay.
I think that this is an industry that has been lagging quite a bit in terms of going online.
Mm-hmm.
Property tech in general is very resistant to technology. And I think that because of that, there's such huge lack of interesting solutions for them to solve these problems. For me, it's very clear. The problem is there. The numbers are there to justify it. The returns are huge. The marketing spend is enormous in prop tech. And there's really nothing there shy of like buying your furniture online, really.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really quite fit with this kind of industry. So the market is there for the grab, and we believe that, you know, we're even kind of late for that.
That's funny because a few months ago I had Rebecca, who is the founder of Lawn Design Club. So they're doing something completely different and also focusing on the fashion tech space.
Mm-hmm.
But she was basically saying the same thing, that it was very hard for retailers to just go online, and not just having a website, but just to innovate was very hard for them. And so it was the same thing, like her business model is completely different, but it's quite interesting to see that they are not necessarily the baby steps for retailers. They don't really try to catch up directly to the online space and get in, but actually go through startups, and the startups are bringing the innovations to the retailers.
Right. Yeah. So Sharon used to work in the industry, so she knows firsthand that it's very, very resistant to change in general.
Mm-hmm.
Not even talking about going online, so.
Yeah. And what about AR? When you mention AR to those retailers, what is the reaction?
Actually, so we get, it's interesting. We get two types of reactions.
Mm-hmm.
When people see the app, is either they see the 3D visualization and they say, wow, or they see the AR and they say, wow. So it's either or. I like AR. I've been working with AR since way before ARKit, and I love the technology, but it's getting easier and easier to do AR. So at some point, it's like a little bit of a gimmick even to do AR. So I like it much more when they get impressed about what's really complicated in there, which is the room, the procedural room stuff. But AR is still not widely known, and people still get impressed. They see the chair digitally, and instead you see in the same place, and it's impressive. So,
but I feel that, well, having worked also in AR and VR for quite a few years, it feels like ages, but it wasn't that long ago. And yeah, I get that feeling where people are excited sometimes for things that are not that big or sort of just simple for you. And you really like when they actually understand what is really cool and what makes it cool.
Yeah,
because they get it. And if they get it, you're on the same page, so it's easier to be in the same
discussion. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You don't talk to me. I'm the technology guy. I mean, obviously, I'm going to be impressed by like the numbers, the data comes out of the wow.
We already started talking a bit about the retailers, and I have a question for this aspect of your business, the retailer side. So how does this work for them also with the 3D model? So you mentioned that that's the main part of the revenue model, that's the retailers, because it's going to be free for users. So on the retailer end, how constraining it is, and how much do they need to already have in terms of 3D models ready?
Yeah, that's a great question. So a lot of them already have them because it's part of their day-to-day, and actually these things are very, very useful in the industry. But even if they don't, we have a process with people in India that can do it really, really fast. So we can design it for them, and it usually takes a couple of days.
Okay, so does this mean that those people will need to have access to the furniture, or can they just 3D, do it
no,
really
it's
3D
just,
without...
Yeah, it's a matter of a couple of pictures and the measurements, and
okay.
that's pretty much it. It's,
okay.
Yeah, it's really not that complicated to create them.
I think that's funny because you said that many of the retailers already have the 3D models, and when talking with lots of people in the AR space, I think lots of people just forget about that. That, yeah, they already do have the assets, and that makes a big difference. That means that it makes the technology more approachable.
Yeah, absolutely. There's one little barrier right now, which is around understanding how to adapt them to augmented reality. So, for example, with AR Kit, you have USDZ
mm-hmm.
Models that you need to adapt into, which, by the way, it's amazing. Once you get it into USDZ, the texture of the models look amazing. So,
okay, that's great
really
to know.
Cool. Yeah.
Talking about AR Kit.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know more about the fact that you're using AR Kit. So it has been made by Apple, in case some people don't know that, which I think most people don't know that. So that means that you're first launching on Apple phones.
Yes.
But how hard it is to then develop the same technology or open up to Android users, looking that it's already developed on the top of an Apple product? And then how constraining it is to work with such Apple products?
That's an interesting question, because again, it comes back to the fact that the AR bit is actually not the most complicated part of the whole system.
Okay.
And in fact, the same way that you have ARKit, you have Core AR, which is Google's version of Android's version of ARKit, and you could do pretty much the same, probably with different models. So we probably would have to adapt the models a little bit,
okay.
and then. Yeah.
So that means that the day you want to switch or to open up your base of users to Android users, you still have lots of work to do, but it's not like
mainly on AR.
Product.
Yeah,
okay.
It's not mainly on AR.
Okay.
I would say even that we probably have been working on AR for quite a while. We were able to develop that really fast,
mm-hmm.
And right now we're working on the interface. I'm very, very, very keen on having great design. For me, it's crucial. I think right now, a startup that doesn't have great UI UX, it's really not bound to be
yeah.
very successful. So we've been working on that. We're actually doing a whole redesign from what we achieved after the PyLabs program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually a lot of work.
I can imagine that.
Yeah.
So you've been through the PyLabs, which is a program, which is an accelerator program. And when you said that you've been redesigning the app, so what has been your approach? Do you think that it's a program itself, like being part of the program, helped you understand that there was something to do with the design of the application itself? Or was it something else? Because I feel that it's really hard to come to what you're doing with a fresh eye and be able to say, well, that's actually not great for my users.
Right.
It's really hard because it's what you're doing and what you're working on every day. So was it a program that helped you understand that, or was it something else?
Well, that's such a great question, actually. Well, first of all, PyLabs was great for many, many different things. In this case, though, when it comes down to design, just the fact that PyLabs was such an intensive program
mm-hmm.
for 3 months, that meant that we have a couple weeks to do the design. And then once we had it, we just ran
okay.
with it. And we developed basically the app. The whole app was developed in 3 months. And once we were done and we launched it on demo day, we, for the first time, started putting it into the hands of consumers,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, lean startup started doing it before. That's obviously the whole point. But we did it after the program because we were basically running to have the product by the end of demo day.
Mm-hmm.
We got it into people's hands. We found out that it was terrible in terms of UX.
That's okay. That's always happened.
Yeah, of course. But, you know, not mainly terrible. The technology was there. The technology is really cool. But we were trying to put in so many, many things into it that it just made it so complicated. So
yeah.
we had a little blog, and we had like these different looks that were sort of like put in this particular way that was very confusing for users and so on and so forth. So we said, okay, let's redesign this thing. So we came back to the drawing board. We have a great, great, great designer that just did an intensive week with
mm-hmm.
us. We redesigned. We loved the new thing. And then we said, okay, yeah, this is it. And we're sort of testing and designing as well at the same time right now, so that works much better. And right now we're going to be able to launch with a beta, a closed beta, which is going to be great. A lot of people are going to give us a lot of feedback, so that's the whole point.
So the launch of the beta is coming quite fast in the coming weeks. What was your approach to launch this way rather than doing a big product launch? And also, my question behind that is also, do you feel that thinking about the entire user experience made you maybe rethink about doing a big product launch or just taking your time to really iterate on the on the user feedback?
So I'm a big fan of avoiding this endless hole of make it perfect and just iterating eternally until it's what you think it can be, because it's never gonna be that, right? But that being said, it's never a good idea to launch without a beta group.
Sure.
or intensive testing before. So there's just two separate things. It's not about making it perfect, really, launching with a beta. It's just about testing before we actually launch. It's not about not having a big launch. We are going to have our launch and it's going to be great, but we need to first have our little group and test it thoroughly.
So beta, and then when do you plan the big launch to be? When do you plan the application to be accessible to everyone?
So I want to do it as fast as possible. This is a conversation that I've been having with the team. So I'm aiming for a month after September 12th, which is when we open our closed beta group.
Okay. No, I meant for the next step. When it will be
so a month after.
Oh, a month after.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
No, that's great. That's short. That gives you not that much time to...
I want to integrate
the feedback.
That's right. So we're actually we did this last time as well. We're putting in a sort of like an A squad team there, with very thorough QA, with a lot more people, hands and eyes into the project, so that we can move really fast. Because the idea is, we want to be able to get the feedback applied as fast as possible. Work day and night and be able to have it within a month.
Okay, that's great. It will be intense, so good luck for that.
It always is.
That's right, yes. But once it's in the hand of someone else, it's like you can't do much more until you get this feedback, and then
it's not even about the actual time that you need to spend working those things. It's about the emotional toll of that feedback. It's really harsh, because obviously we get it into the hands of people and they say, okay, I really don't get this thing. I would never use this thing, or
it's harsh.
Yeah, it's harsh, and you have to be very, very cold and separate. Like, okay, so this one's not my audience. That one's giving me pretty good feedback, and I need to sort of digest it and see how I can make it into a reality. And that one, whatever, I don't know. So it's always intense.
Can you imagine that? You also mentioned the rest of the team. So what's the composition of the team right now?
So we're six people. So there's Sharon, there's me, there's Claire, which is our marketing superstar. There's Anna, which is our iOS developer superstar.
Okay.
There's Andrew, which is the Unity superstar. He's amazing. And there's Mike, which is the 3D designer.
Okay. So more the of creators and not that many people with the interior design. So your co-founder bring the interior design and industry expertise, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's very nice. And so you had funding through the accelerator program. On the phone, you also mentioned that you were looking to raise some angel investment too. So what's the next step in terms of the company growth for you in the coming months?
So ideally, we want to go through the investment route. This is a project that definitely has the capability of getting its own traction and its own little funding. It doesn't have to wait for funding as the only means of growth. We can also generate some revenue because of the model that we're working in. But it would essentially be too slow. So we're definitely going through the funding route, and we're doing two main things. Generally, one is a very small round right at the end of development, with a small group of angels, a lot of them already committed to the idea that they want to join us on this. And then we want to go through the VC route, which is a little bit more ambitious, a little bit more money, and hopefully get, you know, much more fuel to just throw this thing into the...
Give a big boost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. You also mentioned on the phone that before going to the VCs, you want to have more data from users and also, I guess, from retailers too. So that's very interesting. I feel that it's definitely the best way to go, having a bit more consistency and being able just not to talk about your idea, but also what you've been up to and have real figures to support your different steps and research.
Yeah. So I with a lot of entrepreneurs with different ideas, and they ask me about their idea. Obviously, they come in and they say, "Okay, so I have this idea for this thing, the Uber for whatever," and I almost always tell them that the idea is almost worthless. It's almost really not important. I would say even 5% of the whole mix. The entrepreneur is huge. The traction that they can get is huge. The audience engagement is huge. The idea itself, I wouldn't waste much time thinking to myself, do I have a good idea? I would spend time putting it in the hands of people and seeing, hey, is people really using it? Are people really using this? Do they really want it? That's essentially the whole core of the work. So I lost my train of thought a little bit there.
No, I get that. That's actually interesting, because that's something I hear a lot, and I completely agree. And as you mentioned before, when you've met with Sharon. Okay, yeah. I get it wrong. Sorry for that.
She's busy with her kids right now, so she's not.
Okay, good. Well, if you listen to that, I'm sorry. I get your name wrong. You mentioned before that when you've met with Sharon, you really wanted to join her adventure, even though it was different at the beginning.
Exactly. And
by the way, I will ask you what it looked like before. I feel that it's the same thing when you feel that someone is on the right track. As I said before, yes, the idea is going to maybe change a bit. The people that are going to join also the project at an early stage will bring a lot to the project. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I see a lot. You have, it's all about the founders and what they're going to make with that.
Yeah.
You have also a lot of people having the same ideas at the same time. Yeah. It happens a lot. It's okay. And what they're going to do with this idea is going to bring that project to completely different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. So most times they don't even know where it's going to take them.
Exactly. I also was chatting yesterday with someone about apps on Facebook, and and how the market for apps is quite crowded. You have lots of apps available, and today, unless you know exactly what you're looking for, you generally don't browse for many type of apps. Mm-hmm. So do you have any specific plan to stand out from the crowd?
So apps are not a market anymore, at least. They're really a channel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same way as saying there's so many products in Walmart, how do you stand out? Yeah, well, so it's not about standing out within Walmart, it's standing out as a product. Ultimately, if we create something and we believe that we are, that it's really useful and that it's really unique and that can really solve a problem, then that itself would be a way to stand out. Now, in terms of marketing, basically the approach that we're taking into that is we want to get 100 users that absolutely love us, and we can create a community with them, and that they interact with us, and that they help us make the product itself better.
Mm-hmm.
We're focusing on not doing heavy promotion necessarily, or going all over Facebook or Instagram or whatever. We're trying to have that connection with real users that are a real community, and that help us focus on the product and create that sort of purple cow that really stands out.
Mm-hmm. That definitely makes sense, and I like how you say that it used to be a market and now it's not anymore. That's very interesting. When do you see this shift happened?
So you cannot make an app right now for the sake of making an app, mm-hmm. because that wouldn't make sense. It's not novel anymore. It's not, I'm not making an app because that's different and that's unique. I'm making an app because of the content of the app itself.
Yeah.
So at that point, it's already not a market. The market is whatever you are promoting through the channel of being an app. If it was practical for me to just take that big furniture and just put it into my customer's place and say, hey, do you like it? Yes? No? Okay, I'll take it back. Obviously, that's not...
Yeah.
It's not a smart way of doing it, but if it was, then that would be my product.
Mm.
So whatever the problem, whatever the way it is that we solve the problem, that is the product ultimately. The app itself is just secondary; it's collateral. It's just the way that we found to be able to solve that problem.
Yeah, no, that's very true. What about your own journey? You have been working with app and with AR for many years. So what did you do before? You mentioned that you moved to London recently. But even before that, what's your journey to entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I really like my own sort of upbringing with technology, because
mm-hmm.
it's a really interesting story, and it talks a lot about my projects on the larger scheme. I had a job initially in marketing, actually, but then after marketing I started working on a company called Prosein, which is a family company. They used to do coverings, and I used
okay.
to be the natural stone manager for all the countries in that company. So it doesn't get much farther away from technology, right? And that's
yes.
because I went to business school. I had no idea of how to code or anything like that. But I was very, very depressed in general in my life, just because I wasn't, accomplishing. If I saw myself being the best at what I was doing,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't happy. So if I see myself in 10 years and I've achieved everything that I want to achieve within this industry, this is not the life that I want to live. So what I started doing, and this is very public to say, but don't try this at home, is I started... on the commute to the office, watching programming videos,
mm-hmm.
And teaching myself programming, basically. So I had to drive like an hour and a half to get to the office. And I started doing this. And I realized that when I got home and I was tired after 11 hours of work, and it's that feeling of you really can't do much, and you're really down. But one thing I could do was program. And I said, okay, obviously there's something here. Funny enough, I had to leave the place where I was, and I had to go back to Venezuela at the time.
Okay.
And because of that, I found myself with a lot of free time. I still was working for the company, but I had to do much, much less.
Mm-hmm.
So I just went all in with programming. And, you know, then one thing led to the other. I opened my own agency, basically. In programming, I started
mm-hmm.
working with brands because I came from marketing. Started doing those augmented reality projects with Duracell and Fossil that I talked to you about. And then, you know, when I moved to London, I said, I'm still with brands. It doesn't quite cut it. I really want to do more passionate work. And that was the work that I do with startups, which is amazing. And it's someone's baby, right? A startup. And that's when I met Sharon, and this whole thing happened.
That's amazing. I love this story. You know, I was... looking at your social media and stalking as usual, because I need to get to know you to ask the right
yeah.
question. And I'm surprised, because I haven't seen that there. Maybe I didn't dig further enough. I don't know. But that's fascinating. And that's funny, because I meet more and more people who are entrepreneurs building their own startup, who actually started in a very completely different way,
mm-hmm.
and one day decided to start coding and to learn more on the technical aspect, to be able to just build something.
Yeah, it's 40-something percent of the coding workforce, actually.
It's huge. That's such a big work. So what did you started with that? Did you started with some usual courses, the foundation? Have you instead in mind something specific you wanted to build, to experiment and to learn the skills? Or what was the path for that, for learning?
So there's a lot of different ways that that you can do it. A lot of people do sort of this online websites where you actually code on the mm-hmm. side and it teaches you. I never found those engaging at all.
Okay.
I used lynda.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this,
which is related to LinkedIn.
LinkedIn,
right?
Yeah, it was bought by LinkedIn. So right now it's LinkedIn Learning,
mm-hmm.
and they have in there this fantastic class called Programming Fundamentals with Simon Allardyce, which I absolutely recommend. That guy is an amazing teacher, and just that class, it was so engaging and so much fun that I feel that that class was really transforming.
Okay.
And
great.
So I took that one, and then I decided whether I wanted to go web or mobile,
mm-hmm.
and I made the right choice, fortunately, because I didn't know what I was doing. So fortunately, I don't know.
No one ever does.
It's funny. But I chose mobile, which was very fortunate because Swift was a very easy language to learn and to get acquainted with. Apple in general is a very easy platform to get started with.
Yeah.
So you can create something, even if it's not great, it's mm-hmm. going to be something. So it's going to give you that feedback. And so that was cool. So I decided I wanted to do a project. I'm Jewish and I used to be a lot more observant.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this one prayer that Jewish people do on certain days.
Mm-hmm.
And certain days they don't, and it's not really, there's not really a logic where you can calculate it, but it's certain days based on the Jewish calendar. So my first app was literally just an app that told you whether or not that day you would do this thing. And it was really hard, actually.
It is. I tried once to make an app and I stick to the website.
Yeah. So, but I did it, and the feeling once I did my first app was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is like, I want to do stuff. So I started taking projects. There was this one guy that wanted to do like a Bitcoin mining calculator.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, let's do it. And I said, okay, fine. So we'll go 50-50, whatever it is, whatever comes out of that, then we'll share it. I believe we made like $3. And I haven't paid him the $150 actually. Yeah. I really need to do that. Yeah. But it was fun, and it's an app, and it exists, right?
Yes.
And once I was able to make it, I was really, it was a game changer.
The thing is, coming also from a non-technical background and having tried myself to create a few things, I feel that it's an amazing feeling that non-technical people can get sometimes. When, you know, you haven't had the formation there as a training to build anything, and you have been told all your life that you're not going to build anything, you're going to help sell something and support in some ways. And when you actually build something on your own, you're just like so proud, you know,
yeah.
Whatever it is, whatever the motivation behind it, you're like, I made something.
Yeah.
I created from nothing. I created a little thing that I can share. I can show to people.
Yeah.
I had this feeling with my website. I spent lots of hours on it. And when it was done, I was like, I did it entirely. So it's great.
And it's amazing. So I told, before we got married, I told my wife, eventually when we have kids, our kids are not going to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
That obviously lacks a lot of context. But what I meant is certain careers, like the one that I went through, like business school, where it focuses on soft skills. Once I discovered that I could create something, and I did it within 6 months,
mm-hmm.
really, and I was able to create something that I can sell, and I can sell it for £5. That's fine. If you create a chair, if you make a chair, you know how to make a chair. That chair can be worth £1,000 or it can be worth £5. That's fine, but it's something you made. It's something that exists, that you can sell. And I feel that right now education is so democratized. It's so available that a lot of people really don't have to go through college to be able to be competent and to be valuable in society or in professional society. You know, and so this whole debate, for example, I don't want to get too political, but this whole debate about, making college free and this and that, I don't even I'm convinced that college is that important.
Mm-hmm.
Also, so like a lot of people can find their way without it.
Yeah.
So it's yeah.
I get that. I've been also through the through some schools, and I feel I left earlier than I planned. Way much earlier than I planned. Because I started having some glimpse about the startup scene and what you could actually learn by doing compared to what you would get seated in a classroom. And I felt also there were a big gap between the two of them. But I also understand that for some people, it is crucial to have some help or some profession that you really need to have.
Architects, doctors. Yeah, there's absolutely. Yeah, obviously not.
But I agree that today with online courses, you can find... You can learn amazing skills on your own, and it's hard. It's hard because you have to take the time for that. You have to have the motivation, and there are so many people just dropping all the programs online. But in the same time, if you really want to make it happen, you can find always a way to learn. And even just meeting people and asking them for advice, going to hackathon or anything,
Yeah, absolutely.
I see lots of questions. Thank you, Red Smart Track.
Let's get political.
Okay, I'm not sure what you're talking about. You put so many messages here.
No, there's a couple of people there, I think. It's just
so
the
it
same.
Says, yeah. So, Red Sam Stark. I'm so bad with names. Red Sam Stark. Say that he knows a kid that's in college for coding, and he asks, who can I get him to be successful?
I wouldn't be able to say that there's one path that works for everybody. And it's not a diss on college even. I mean, some people need that structure to be able to learn everything that needs to be learned. And in fact, I mean, I know that I'm lacking so much of the formal structure because I didn't have the experience to go through college on a more formal computer science career. So it's nothing about one or the other, or one being better than the other, not at all. It's more about opportunities being there to create things by yourself if either something else that you already did wasn't there, or the momentum isn't there, or you want to start exploring new things. Those things are available, and that's the whole point, basically.
And eventually, you are the CTO of Decology, so I feel that yes, you need to understand the technical aspect, but in the same time, part of your role is also to make the right decision and hire the right people around you to make it happen. So it's not just about you coding everything, and I think the part of the mindset of being in a startup and building a startup is actually more about the mindset itself and being flexible and having the right people more than really being the best at what you're doing.
Yeah, like, absolutely. And it's funny that you mentioned that because just because I wasn't through that formal system, and because I come from another world, which is marketing, it actually fits quite well to my job as a CTO because I have to face investors. I have to put myself in the place of a user. I have to do these different things that are not necessarily so related to actually just coding, and that are actually quite valuable in the industry because, you know, clients are from Venus, developers are from Mars. It's really hard to communicate with developers in general. That's a big generality, but just the fact that I can really see myself one-to-one with my co-founder and with investors and with users, it's really valuable. So coming from a different path in life, it's actually valuable.
Is there anything specific you felt that you had to learn to step up as a CTO of the company? Or is it just about just doing it and we'll see what I can learn?
No, lots of things and I'm still learning. So no, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if there's a specific path. I'm definitely lacking quite a bit of skills that I want to be able to get better at in the future. But of course, you need to have a general idea of... how to hire competent people, how to manage their work, how to review their code, and all these things that obviously are very technical and very specific skills that you need to have to be able to do something at that level where, you know, I'm starting a startup that is a formal thing that's going to be launched and it's going to be available to people. Yeah, absolutely.
And about your entrepreneurial journey with Decology, what do you feel that has been the biggest challenge you've been facing? Not just you, but also as a team right now so far, because you haven't launched yet. You're going to launch the beta next month, and you're going step by step. But I feel that you already been through a few things. And so what has been the most challenging things that happened for now?
With startups in general, it's just the fact that there isn't a structure by definition, because we're just getting started. And we're trying to build that as we go. So we're building a product, and at the same time, we're building relationships with retailers, with users, with investors. And at the same time, we're building our own relationships as a team, and sort of getting that culture fit from the beginning. It's also sometimes a challenge. How do we schedule these meetings so that we can know what each other is doing, and so on and so forth. I want to say there's one challenge. There's millions of them. It's really, it's really, really hard. Startups are not for people that want to get rich overnight. Startups are for people that love this whole process, because getting rich overnight, it's overblown. It's not, you know...
You get rich overnight after working really hard for 15 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There you go. That's a good one. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. No, I feel that that's an interesting point. It's definitely a marathon, and it's not... You hear stories on the news and everything, but people forget that behind. Most of the time, it's really hard work. For sure, there are some people that manage to get through lots of, you know, get lots of money or lots of visibility, get viral in a day. But generally, it's not how things work, and
no,
people forget about that.
Yeah.
But I think it wouldn't be that fun if it was just about one day being viral and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, being an entrepreneur is about doing it every day, not about luck.
No, and even if you get viral, that's just half of the story, because then you have to deliver. That's
exactly.
Yeah.
Is there anything that really helped you? I don't know if it's London or just generally... being an entrepreneur, any resources, anything that you find really useful?
Google Campus that we're both part of is amazing. A lot of people that are going through the same journey, that's absolutely great. The one thing that comes to mind when you ask that question is 100% family, and I'm very lucky. Yeah,
I'm surprised.
You're surprised, really?
Yeah, that's definitely not the answer that I would expect. Okay.
So... I'm very lucky in the sense that I come from a family where pretty much everybody is an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
I learn a lot from them. It's one thing to be surrounded by entrepreneurs, sort of like at the same level as you are and going through the same struggles as you are, because you can do a lot of back and forth and sort of solve more of the day-to-day problems. But having people in my family to look up to that have already accomplished significant things and that are there ready to mentor me and to help me with my things and just to be there when one needs them, it's actually really, really quite powerful. If you can be surrounded by such people that have already accomplished such things, and they can be helpful and useful to you, that's I think that's the main thing. That's definitely what comes to mind.
Okay, and I would say if you don't have such model in your family, you can always find people in the community ready to share their story or to mentor you. It's not necessarily about getting into a mentorship program, but more just being aligned in terms of values with some people and just having this kind of feedback or just relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. I do believe that there is. It's very important in business, just like... In terms of evolution, we need to show that we're strong to be able to be successful. There is something to that, but we all get so caught up with that it's sometimes very hard to just step back and say, I don't know quite a bit of things, and I need help from people. And I feel that that's been my approach all my life. Like, I've been very humble about where I stand, and I've tried to get as much help from people as I can, and if I see somebody that has something to give me, I'm not shy in telling them, hey, you're clearly much more experienced than me on this thing. I don't know what I'm doing on this area. Can you please help me? So that will help you get people that will be useful for you.
That's an amazing tip for sure. So I have a real question this time. Can I download your Android app? So I'll let you answer that.
So unfortunately, we're not going to be in Android anytime soon. We're dealing with very, very demanding technology that we want to ensure runs smoothly, and that happens in iOS.
And we also mentioned that you're launching a beta version for a small amount of people next month. So I guess if people want to get more information, they can check your website and social media.
And there's a link on the website, and you can opt into the closed beta group, and you can have the app and use it.
So if you have more questions, where can people find you? Maybe offline, online, any upcoming event or something?
Yeah, I happen to have a very unique name. First of all, this is in Spanish, and second of all, has a German last name. So if you search for that name, you'll find all my stuff. I don't think there's too many too many people with my name, so I'm sure it's going to be on the...
Yes, it's going to be in the description of the video and everywhere on social media.
Awesome, so I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, find me on Facebook. My first name at theecology.com if you want to email me.
Huge thanks to Jacobo for joining me on the stream today, and thanks to all of you for listening to Entrepreneurs Playing Games podcast edition. For my part, you can find me on Twitter at Amandine Flax, AmandineFlachs, and be sure to check out my YouTube channel at youtube.com/AmandineFlax for the full video version of our discussion and much more. Also, if you want to join the live stream and ask your own question to our next guest, Entrepreneurs Playing Games is taking place every 2 weeks on Saturday mornings. So keep an eye on our social media, and I hope to see you there very soon.